a Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, goal!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrude.
What's up guys, I can't decide how I want my hat, so I apologize. But yeah, happy to be here. Gang's all here.
Yeah, the start of this podcast went about as smooth as yesterday's game, so hopefully we finish strong.
Yeah, and Jan?
Yeah, what's up, guys? Good to be back.
Yeah, we've all got smiles on our faces because we're in a bit of a better mood compared to last week when we drew 1-1 with Sampdoria. Look, I mean, dive straight into the game that happened yesterday. Obviously, we record on Sunday. This game happened Saturday night. We recorded a 3-1 win against Parma. Now, I didn't really do justice during the pre-match preview that we did last week's episode as to just how bad Parma have been this season. They've been absolutely awful. And it was only when I properly looked through their season on the day of the game that I realised there was no option other than to win the game. You know, they're really struggling. They've been in the bottom three since the 16th round of the season, I believe. They've won one of their last 16 games, and that, funnily enough, came against Roma. But they're having a dreadful season. And I think during the first half, we saw elements of why they're struggling so much after a good season, first season back in 2019-20. But we managed to escape with the win. It was anything but straightforward in the end. So for to go through it chronologically, we need to start with what was a very, very strong opening to the game from us. We saw signs of what we saw against Fiorentina, where we had the quick passing combinations and everything was looking good among the front four players. We were able to field our front four that you would say is our first choice, with Salamakers, Çalhanoğlu, Rebic on the left, Ibra up front, and then Kessié and Bennacer in midfield. And it's the first time in something like, I saw the tweet saying it's the first time in over 100 days that we've been able to field our first choice midfield and attack. And you could see that it made a difference because they were really gelling. And then we got the goal nice and early on. It was good work from him, good hold-up play. And he reversed the pass nicely into Rebic, who let the ball roll past him and thumped it into the top corner. So that was all well and good. And I'd say that kind of set the tone for the first half. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty textbook performance from us in the first half. Like, that's how we've won majority of our games, going quick early, go up quick, and then we just kind of see it out from there, like you said. Million times we never get out of first gear. We don't have to most of the time, which is great, but things progressed from there, and the second half was a little bit different, but we pulled it off. I do think, and you guys will see the player ratings going across the bottom, Zlatan got a 5. I think that's harsh given what we know now. At the time it was partially because of the sending off, but I mean, he obviously had the assist on the first goal. I think he was pretty crucial in the second goal as well. And from what we could tell, he just he wasn't saying anything mean to the ref. He was just like, why don't you care what I have to say? It looks strange to me, talking about the foul that wasn't called. And then he got straight red for that, which is, you know, not really card worthy at all, let alone red card. So rating's a little harsh, but that's why it's like that, if anyone is curious.
You know, on last week's podcast, after we drew, I think you guys were talking about how we never get out of first gear because we can't. And now when we win, you guys are like, oh, it's nice. We don't have to get out of first gear. We can't get out of first gear, whether we win or lose. This is just how we play.
No, I think things got tough this game.
I think barely. We haven't. And we don't, even when we're losing.
Half the time, though.
If we could get out of first gear, then we wouldn't be losing to these shit sides.
We've only lost to Spezia, who are below us, though, you know, in terms of outside the top six. I think if you're referring to the draws that we've had, you know, you look at the Udinese and Sampdoria home games that we've had in the last few weeks, those have been incredibly frustrating, and we have struggled to get out of first gear. We've always found a goal when needed to get at least a draw out of the game, and that those points could be important come the end of the season. You know, they all add up. But in terms of this game in particular, we shouldn't need to get out of first gear against Parma. And there's no, well, half disrespect to Parma there, because they're absolutely awful this season. We know that. They're losing most weeks. But also, I'd be worried if we really, really had to try hard to get a result against Parma. Now, I know we had to scrap like hell for that point at home, the 2-2 draw when Teo scored twice. And I know that last season, when we came to Parma under Gianpaolo, again, we had to really scrap, and Teo scored a late winner in that particular game as well. But I don't think this is the game where you judge whether we can get out first gear, whether we can put a team to the sword. At 2-0 up at half time, I really think we would have given them a pasting. We might have won 4-0 or something if it carried on the way that it should have. But we know now, obviously, what happened with Ibrahimovic, and obviously the red card changes the whole dynamic of any game, let alone when it's with a 2-goal lead that very quickly becomes a 1-goal lead. I thought that after we conceded the goal, we managed the game really well, and Pioli made some good subs. And AJ, you can justify the subs because you're a big fan of him.
Oh, okay. I did tweet about that. No, I at first I was a little bit confused, you know, just seeing the names that were coming off and the ones coming on. I was like, Maddie and John and I, we all watched the game together, but we were all saying like these are negative subs. But as we saw what happened, Pioli had switched the formation to a 3-5-1. Someone on Twitter told me it was technically a 5-3-1. And I just want to say that 5-3-1 is not a real formation, because you're a three at the back. You have three defenders, and then your wing backs aren't defenders. They're wingers that are back. So they're midfielders. So it's a 3-5-1. Anyways, that doesn't matter. But that's what it was. So he put on, took off Bennacer for, who did he take? Put on, was it Mate or Krunic that came on for Bennacer? I can't remember which one. Mate, yeah, who's Mate more physical and more set into the midfield role. And he took off Kulu for Gabia, a more natural center back. And he took off Salmakers for who Dallow. Came on? Dallow, who's obviously Diogo. More of a wing back. So he changed the formation up, and he justified it with the right moves. They may have seemed weird at the time, but they all had their role. And it obviously worked, because Dallow had an assist in the end there to get the third goal. So
it was good. Sorry, it was Gabir who came on for Kalulu. But yeah.
That's what he said.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Dallow for Salamakers, Krunic for Çalhanoğlu, Gabir for Kalulu, and Leal for Rebic, which was the one at the end, which was the obvious one, because, you know, it's a bit of pace on the counter.
The one I didn't mention was Çalhanoğlu for Krunic. And that one made the most sense, because Çalhanoğlu obviously attacking mid, Krunic just a standard center mid, so that made the most sense to adapt for the formation there as well. So,
yeah.
Props to Pioli, he got it right.
I think Pioli's been under a lot of criticism for his substitution choices, his starting 11 choices. But there was a game a few weeks ago when we were saying, I can't remember which one it was, but we were criticizing some of his subs, but then it turned out to be a stroke of genius. We were putting it in the group, I can't think which one it was. It were something to do with Kalulu anyway. And I think he just shows it's why we're not managers and he is, and why we're starting second, because most of the time we get stuff right. And when we've got a full squad like we had yesterday, bar obviously Calabria and Romagnoli, we show what we are capable of. And if we'd have had that all season, then I still think we'd be first.
I do want to point out that we played better with 10 men against Parma than we did playing with 11 men against a 10-man Sampdoria, which is kind of...
Isn't that weird? I feel like it's really weird. Theme. Like, we struggle against 10-men sides. We're going to do so well that we don't push. And then when we go down a man, we're like, well, we're going to struggle. We got to push. It almost gives us
that depends what you mean, though. What do you like, define as playing better? Because there's absolutely no doubt that we had 80% of the ball against Sampdoria for the last 30 minutes after we had a man advantage, whereas against Parma, the possession completely flipped and they ended up with nearly 60%. We let them have the ball and we defended really deep and compact. And
I'd say playing better is scoring goals.
So we had more threat, probably.
Yeah,
we scored one goal with a man disadvantage and we scored a goal with a man advantage against Sampdoria, but we're probably more threatening on the break, obviously, in the Parma game, but that's the difference when they're chasing the game versus when we're chasing the game. It's just like, you know, the situation that you put into. But Is it what's interesting to me about yesterday, and I suppose we should mention the second goal first before we go on to what happened in the second half. That was a fantastic move, a really, really good move. Some lovely link-up play between Teo, who I thought had a good game. He got a 6.5 in our ratings, which I think was about fair. But some lovely link-up play between Teo and Ibra. And then, interestingly, Kessier, once again, was playing as basically a centre-forward. If you watch where that move starts, Kessier stood on the edge of their box. So there's no, you know, there's none of that. He drifted up into that position. He started that move as the centre forward. And I found that interesting. It shows that we're trying to win games like we did against Hellas Verona by moving players into positions where you wouldn't expect them to be and to win by rotation. And it worked a treat because Kessier latched onto the through ball and rolled it in and bang, 2-0. And that was a lovely goal. And scoring that, I thought we'd have a very easy second half, to be honest with you. But for the idiotic red card slash, you know, probably wasn't idiotic.
Let's talk about the goal we conceded, because I had questions about it, thinking maybe it should have been called back for dangerous play. You know, I mean, he stomped Donnarumma's hand at that point. Like, is that not?
It didn't look like he stomped.
I think
he got the ball first.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen when like goalkeepers are jumping up to get the ball, and an attacker will try and kick it. They're like, "Well, you can't do that. It's already his ball." And I know this is different; like it was ground level, but I mean, he's right there. His face is already in the path. So I don't know.
I'd be a hypocrite if I said that should have been called off, because I think that goalkeepers now are massively overprotected. They get the whistle blown for anything, even the slightest bit of contact. They go up to try claim a cross, they get a whistle blown free kick. I think, you know, that they are overprotected now. But the goal itself was more worrying for me, in that we tried to set up a certain way with trying to shift the playing a deeper defensive line, but doing it more narrow. And I've got a screenshot, which I might ask you to edit in, actually, that showed how narrow we were playing. And then what they did was just put Graziano Pella, who's obviously the big man for them, put him on the back post. And he was finding it really easy to win headers because he was outside of the sort of three that we were playing deeper. And he was the one who won an uncontested header back across goal for them to tap it in to make it 2-1. But what we did do really well, having seen that, is adapt. And we put Kier on Pella, and we put Tomori on Cornelius. So we played a man-to-man then and stopped trying to play a zone. And that was ultimately what saw us over the line. I mean, they didn't have any real major chances after that. They had one header that was glanced wide. And then you see, I mean, you say about the 5-3-1, 3-5-1, whatever you want to say. I'd argue it was probably more asymmetrical than that, because Dalot was basically pushing up as a right winger and trying to press on that flank, because that's where all the crosses were coming in from. And we nicked the ball back, and that's when he takes it 70 yards maybe and draws in three defenders, squares it to Liao, and we win the game. But yeah, tactically, I totally agree. I think he got it spot on yesterday. I think he got it spot on. But if we had conceded a second goal,
Dalot gave a penalty actually in the last minute there, right before the goal.
Yeah, we were fuming, weren't we, when we watched it? Like, we were almost certain.
The ref pointed for a goal kick, and I thought he pointed to the spot, and I was like, oh no, we were nervous.
Yeah, I was just like, was that a penalty? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, his loan had been terminated there, and then he just subbed him off with a penalty.
My issue with all that we conceded were the fact that we conceded it in the way that we did. Like, it's all right, Kieran Tomori dropping great performances week in, week out, but we're still not keeping clean sheet, and that's a worrying thing for me. Good side, like the top side that winning trophies, managed to keep clean sheets, even when they're being bombarded with it at the goal and stuff like that. So I just think that's something that we need to sort out. Just sloppy, not necessarily sloppy, shitty goals that we keep conceding.
Yeah, wasn't it? Yeah, you counted yesterday, John. Was it like 6 or 7 games in a row that we haven't kept a clean sheet?
Something like that. Since Verona at home, we had to get a clean sheet. And then before that, it was Crotone. Not Verona at home, the Verona match. And then before that, it was the 4-0 win against Crotone, which for someone that...
Well, we kept one at Verona away.
That's what I meant. Right. Verona away on the match.
Since then.
Crotone were the last one before that. And I just think a side that's challenging for top four or that's challenging for the Scudetto, whichever way you want to see it, you can't be... You've got to try and find a way to keep them clean sheets. And this will come on to the Gigi a bit. When you're asking for 12 million a year, you have to be involved in keeping them clean sheets. Like, did he really need to dive out for that ball? That's just been a bit critical. Like, he just stayed on his line and had a better chance. But that's what you pay the top money for, to keep clean sheets in games like that.
He made a couple of smart saves. He made that double save. But yeah, I know what you mean.
But that means nothing if you don't really keep clean sheets, because we still concede the goal. You know,
like, he dived over the ball. If you look at it, he got there. He more than got there to cut that out. But his hands just weren't in the right place. So you could argue it was preventable. I know what you're saying. For that big money, then you need to be a match winner. You need to make sure that you're not putting your team in. But for me, the goal is probably 90% on Kier. He lost his man.
Like I'm saying, it's just been a bit critical. But when you're paying someone 12 million a year, you've got to be critical of them. You can't just let him off to make a couple of good saves before that. The goals that they concede, you've got to proper analyse just for the money that they're on. That's where you pay the money for a striker who is a game changer.
If a striker misses a big chance, and I keep seeing Ibra, like we had on the in the incident that happened yesterday when he'd been red carded, we had quite a lot of quote tweets of people saying 8 million a year, you know, he's going to be getting 7 million, 8 million. And it all comes down to money at the end of the day. So when you see people saying all that about, you know, our leader, if you want to call him leader, whatever, and criticising him based on the amount that he earns, regardless of the fact that he'd had a good first half performance, then I think that Gigi, if he signs a new deal with a pay rise, is going to be under incredible scrutiny to prove that he's the best goalkeeper, not only in the league, but in Europe.
In the world.
If he signs a new deal, in the world. If he signs a new deal, then that's where he'll be. That's the amount that he's earning. And you could argue, he probably is a top five goalkeeper in Europe at the moment. You could argue that. It's not a fact. Mm-hmm. You know, you could make an argument for it. But the money that he earns is going to be top two. So now she's time.
Well, you look at Kepa, you know, he went for like a world record transfer fee for goalkeepers, and that automatically put him under the microscope, you know, and he probably was an above average goalkeeper at Chelsea, but because of that price tag, he sure looked a lot shittier, you know, and then they had to get rid of him because of it. So, yeah, I mean, if we're paying Donnarumma as much as the rumors are that he's demanding, then absolutely you need to be critical of every move he makes, every save. Could it have been better? Could it have been worse? Like, you know,
I mean,
you have to hold him to that standard.
You stick a normal goalkeeper in the net, just for an example, like a Musso in net for that, then you don't even analyse it. You just think, yeah, he's got a mucky. But when you are paying someone to be essentially the best goalkeeper in the world on the money that he's on, you're expecting to compete in games like this. In my opinion, but I think
Tata Rushanu was in goal for this game, and he had the exact same game, same big saves early, same miss. Everyone would have said, guaranteed Gigio saves that. But Gigio didn't save it, you know? So it's like, he has this reputation he has to uphold. And if he's not doing it, then he's going to get rightfully criticized, especially when he eventually gets that 12, 10 million a year, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And he will. He'll get that eventually. Maybe not this renewal, but he gets it two or three from now or at another club somewhere. He'll get it if he continues.
Yeah, I don't even want to cover the renewal because I feel like we've done it to death and nothing's moved forward. But I agree with that. What I will say is that obviously Gigio was not the main culprit for us being in difficulty in that game. As I say, Kier was the one to blame for the goal. He lost his man, Gallioni, I think it was. And also, now, you mentioned about Ibra getting a 5-in-hour player rating. At the time, we were all saying that's ridiculous from Ibra, that's naive. Rebic has been sent off for slagging off the referee against Napoli. How can you get yourself sent off for saying something to the referee, blah, blah, blah. But it sounds like Maresca's been an absolute disgrace. You know, we have to talk about this. If that's, I mean, you can literally hear it, what Zlatan says. Now, what you can't hear is what was said in the minutes leading up to that. Perhaps is something different.
I think it's a harsh ending off. I think I get yellow carded for that. But there's a point where I'm pretty sure it's purely shouts, Bravo, Hakan and Ibra still talking to the referee where that video clip is. And there's all the stuff before that. So I do think there's more in it than what we believe. But it's proof from Maresca, but I still think there's a tiny bit more to it than just him saying it seems strange. Because I don't think sometimes you don't even get yellow card for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, because, so in the rule book, dissent is a yellow, blasphemy is a red. So to get a straight red like he did, he had to assume he said something. And now there's people saying that he said Bastardo, which kind of sounds similar to Strano. If you take in the Bravo Hakan from Pioli at the same time, maybe he heard a little bit of that Bravo and then the end of Strano and he pieced it together. That's the only thing I could come up with. Mm. But even then, that's a stretch. So it's like he had to have said something prior that we don't hear. But then the weird thing is the swiftness that Maresca pulls the red card after he says Strano. So I don't know.
What it's a little everyone's weird. Faces? Like everyone looked like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
Gigio went after the referee, didn't he? Gigio said, come storming out of his box saying, Bravo, Maresca, it's always you. You know, you always have to be the protagonist, which makes me think. And Kier was like, what are you doing? Which makes me think, I just feel like his teammates wouldn't have backed him if he'd said something out of order. If you watch Rebic, when he got sent off, he just got matched off by them all. He said, what are you doing? But I don't know. It'll come out because Maresca's going to have to...
Gigio was the furthest away from the situation, so how could he really hear it, you know? Like, I mean, I get it. You got to ride or die for your boys.
I mean, there's also no fans in the stadium, so...
Yeah, you can't hear it.
Yeah,
he could hear it a lot. Off the basis that Ibra got sent off for what he said, then Donnarumma should have also got sent off for saying that. In my opinion, he's actually said something worse about Maresca.
That's true.
So he got sent off. So I actually think that there is some more to it that we all just haven't heard, and none of us were there, so we can only hear like a two second video snippet, and Maresca's clearly heard something else, and maybe even the linesmen that are all mic'd up will be like, whoa, he actually didn't say something that heavy.
Could be an accumulation of things. Yeah, like Maresca might have been waiting, and Ibra was chipping away, and he finally just said one thing, and he was like, no, off you go.
That's probably true, but at the same time, you can't just give a straight red for constant annoyance.
We'll see it.
You know,
we'll see.
You got to give a yellow first.
I mean, it's definitely going to be reduced to a one game based off the fact that Rebic was reduced to a one game and he called the referee's mum a prostitute. So I should hope that that's why. I should hope it is just down to one game. But, you know, I am a firm believer that there was something else said in the build up to that because you just don't get a straight red for it. And Maresca's been around long enough not to give a straight red for something so little.
But he always kind of does.
He's also one of them. He's far too proud and he cares too much about his name. And, you know, he's like the Mike Dean of Italy.
On the same basis, like I said, you send Donnarumma off for what he said, which in my opinion is worse than what we believe Ibra to have said.
And so
if it was just that, Donnarumma should have gone and all.
Yeah. And
that's why I think he probably misheard or we misheard. You know, because I listened to that clip a lot of times, and granted, I was listening to it with the intent of hearing something inappropriate. So eventually I did hear that, you know, but I could hear it being said both ways. Like it with his accent and the full sentence, it can sound similar. So
but
I don't know.
At the end of the day, he was mouth shut. It's the captain's job to go up to the referee if there's any dispute or you want to challenge something. Ibra is just playing. You've got to have respect to the referee. So even saying what he said, it's deserving of yellow. I'm not saying it's deserving of a red, but just someone that's been in the game for 20 years should be doing a lot better than that.
Mm-hmm. One thing I will say is you can look at it.
If there were fans
ways.
In there, he's not getting sent off. He's not being heard.
Probably not.
So
probably
his 20 years of experience is like, I could kind of mumble this shit under my breath, you know? And then he does, and now it's heard, so.
I think that Italian referees in particular are very, very precious.
Awful.
Like, they don't like things being said against them, you know, personally. They don't like things that are said against them personally. So obviously you see that with the Rebic sending off. It's pretty bad. Now, in my opinion, that's a personal insult. It should probably be a red card. You know, I don't agree. But then if you look at the standards compared to here in England, I watched West Ham against Leicester earlier. And I counted three times that Jamie Vardy told the same linesman to fuck off.
Yeah, but then
he got
that,
a decision wrong or, you know, repeatedly abusing the linesman. And he got nothing. He got absolutely nothing. You know, they just
Dean Smith
brush it off.
Didn't he? Or was it Sean Dyche that got sent off to say something to the referee? I just think it depends on which referee you have. And at the end of the day, the referee is kind of the boss of the game. And you've just got to have respect for him. And if he thinks you're being disrespectful, then he's in within his right to run the chicard. I just think someone that's 40 year old should be managing situations like that better and knows better than to like give the referee any sort of abuse, even if it is just a normal call. Like,
At 2-0, he just got to get his head down and keep going with it. Even if he mutters it under his breath, it's better than doing what he did. Yeah. It'll all come out in the report. And I know what AJ was, you know, saying earlier about how, I don't know if the report is actually going to be truthful or what, but I'm sure then we'll get a clearer understanding of exactly what Maresca thinks has gone on. And it sounds like, based on what sources are saying, that we're going to appeal it because Ibra is adamant that he didn't say anything untoward.
Well, so the good news is there's plenty of audio out there. I mean, the games are recorded start to finish nowadays, and you could take out commentator because that's all overlaid. So they're going to find out what he said. If they want to appeal it, they'll be like, this is what he claims he said. Let's listen to it. Let's see what he said, you know, and then we'll find it. So at the end, actually, the report will be really interesting. If Maresca says he said one thing and then the audio comes out and it's entirely different, now Ibra's exonerated and Maresca looks like a total clown. You know, if it's something similar, you'd be like, okay, I get the misunderstanding. But if he says, go ahead.
Referees have got to know this. Like, when they do a report, they've got to be able to back it up, and they know that there's enough evidence around the stadium that will show that they're wrong. So I do just, it will be interesting to see what he puts, but I do believe there's something more to it.
Well, it's like I'm not going to use that analogy, but they're never going to put in their official report that they did a bad job, you know? They're going to justify themselves 100% no matter what they do, so.
Yeah, it's a case of reputation, isn't it?
I wouldn't expect him to admit any, I may have made a mistake here, but here's why. Like, that's not going to happen. He's going to find a way to justify
especially
it.
Especially if it would have affected the outcome of the game, he would definitely not admit that he made a mistake. We ended up winning, but you know.
Is it next season where referees have got to justify the decisions at the end of the game, or is that just what they're hoping for? Because that's going to be interesting to see in the matches, like, where they justify why they've made the decision, whether it be a penalty call or sending off a booking. So that should be interesting.
Normally,
it's needed moving forward.
The referee report is really ambiguous at the moment, because what they're meant to do is exactly what you've said there. They're meant to state in black and white why they gave what they gave. But there's been a thing at the moment where that hasn't been happening. You know, they've basically just been stating that, for example, Ibrahimovic was sent off for dissent or something. Whereas the idea is next season, I think from next season, that there's going to be more transparency behind the decision-making, which I think is very much needed. It's the next best thing to miking up referees, and I don't think that that should be a thing, to be totally honest with you. I don't think referees should be mic'd up. I don't see why that would be needed, to be totally honest with you. You've got to trust that. What that ultimately does is takes the trust away from the referees to tell the truth.
Yeah, you know, find one fan that has trust in a referee, though. There is no trust anyways. Referee's the hardest job in any sport because nobody trusts you. So rugby, I think the mics are a good idea. And when they're, say they make a call, you know, they make penalty call and everyone's like storming around him, his explanation is going to be said right there, whether it's brief or detailed. At least you're going to get a little something, because a lot of times at home you'll see something and you'll think one thing happened, but the ref's like, no, that's not even what we're doing. You know, like if a goal gets overturned for, I don't know, they don't call the penalty and you don't know why. And they're like, how can you not call the penalty? That was a clear foul. And he's like, well, it was offside, but we don't know that because we don't hear anything. We just assume he's not calling the penalty. At least with the mic.
Funniest thing I saw was once when, I can't remember which game it was, but it was a Serie A game. It was on a Friday night and a cross came in and it was like a ricochet inside the box and the ball went behind. And the referee sort of pointed like that. And all of the defending team gathered around the referee as if to say, why are you giving a penalty? And he was like, I'm pointing for a goal kick. And everyone had lost their shit. And he was just like, what do you mean? I'm not pointing for a penalty. And I think in rugby,
the referees are mic'd up and it works pretty well because you can hear them over like the TV where they tune into it and they just explain like the decisions they've made and stuff like that. So I think
in the NFL, every call needs to be stopped and explained.
It
does promote respect, does making up refs in rugby. But the one thing I will say about rugby union is that the players are certainly not. It's a different culture within that sport. You know, football is football. They've always known putting pressure on the referee. To be honest, they've always known firing abuse at the referee, be it right or wrong. Yeah. So I think there'd be a really, really weird period of adaptation where you're talking 6 red cards a game for dissent and stuff like that. If you want to do it properly, you know, like with VAR, our penalties have gone up because all of a sudden handball inside the box, no matter what, is a penalty. It's like you're going to see more. You're going to see more red cards for dissent and stuff if you start making up referees.
Being well, you might also, you're going to stop referees from chirping back at players because that happens too, you know. Mm-hmm. You just don't hear it because it's on the pitch. But the ref will say something to a player. He'll say something back too. And now with the mics, he's not going to say that.
Well, there was a big scandal recently in the NHL. They mic up ice hockey refs as well. And you can clearly hear the referee say when he gives a penalty that it was a make-up call for one that he missed. Now, that caused a lot of problems because can you imagine miking up a referee for the Roma game at home earlier this season when he gives the penalty on Çalhanoğlu and has to say, well, I gave the other one badly, so I've got to give this one. That won't go down well, you know? So you've got to be very careful. Right, that's it. Parma done. I can't really think of any. Obviously, you can see the ratings along the bottom there. Not an awful lot of standouts, to be totally honest with you, but we agree substitutions right, tactics right from the first minute, and big 3 points because everybody else has basically won around us. Napoli won, Juve beat Genoa, we'll come on to Genoa. Atalanta are probably going to win. I think they kicked off just now. And who was the other one? Lazio won late on at Hellas Verona. So, we needed that win. We needed that win, and Jammy Inter got another 1-0. Right, Genoa preview. So Genoa were having an awful season until the halfway point of the season when they sacked their manager at the time, which was Rolando Moran, and they brought Davide Bardini back. And then they had a nice run where they won 4 out of 5 games. And since then, they've won 1 out of their last 9. And that win, funnily enough, was away against Parma, who everyone agrees are awful. But they've got enough points on the board to be just about clear now of the bottom three. They're in 13th place at the moment. They're actually a point behind Udinese. And, you know, everyone thinks Udinese are pretty much a typical mid-table team. They're also ahead of Fiorentina by two points, even though Fiorentina have a game in hand. So they're not an awful side. They gave Juve a bit of difficulty today. They pulled a goal back to make it 2-1. Scamacca scored. Obviously, he's been linked intensely with Milan. And they ended up losing 3-1, so not an ideal result for us. But now I've got the shivers. I've got the shakes. I've got the scares about this game, whatever you want to say, because it's a game at home at 12:30, and we don't like lunchtime kickoffs.
No, we don't. Especially AJ. He has to wake up at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, yep. That's not ideal either.
No.
I just don't like them after a heavy weekend on the sesh, to be honest.
And we've got that. Yeah, the pubs are back in England. So it's another reason me and Jan are upbeat at the moment. Next week we get our freedoms back. But yeah, at least it's a Sunday and not a Saturday, because Saturday can ruin your whole weekend if we lose first thing on a Saturday morning. But yeah, and it doesn't feel like we have easy games ever against Genoa, no matter what. Obviously, the last game earlier this season, we drew 2-2 and we were lucky to get a point, despite... Was it Kalulu, wasn't it, who scored the late equaliser? And then last season, it was actually the first game... Was it the game before lockdown? I think it was, wasn't it, when Genoa won 2-1?
1-0, didn't we lose? Or
2-1, I think, wasn't it? Either way, we lost at home and it was a big shock.
And I think anything that was pre-lockdown, that was too long ago.
I think that was the first game.
We lost 2-1.
Yeah. I think it was the last game before lockdown, and it was the game that sparked our run because we came back and thumped Lecce after the lockdown, and that started the run, obviously. But yeah, I ain't feeling massively confident about this one, but I'm almost at a point now where it's like law of averages with our home form. We've taken 40 points away from home, and our home form is significantly worse than that. And we keep dropping points. You know, the games we've lost, we lost to Juve, Atalanta, Inter and Napoli. It's tough to find far worse opponents to lose at home to. Obviously, we've drawn against Parma, Hellas Verona, Isaac.
Oh, bloody hell.
Sampdoria and Udinese. None of those are ideal either. You know, those are teams that are outside the top six. So that's why I'm not massively overconfident for this game. But law of averages says surely we've got to get it right at some point. And Genoa are in a bit of a rut. Like I say, 1-9. And they're on the beach. You know, you would have thought the same about Sampdoria, but never mind. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously this Scamacca who's been linked with us, he seems to be their danger man. They've got Mattia Destro, who that goal against us seemed to kind of spark him into life. I don't know. You worried, lads?
Yeah. Do we think Leao starts up top if Zlatan suspension is upheld?
It has to be done because I don't think Mandzukic is fit enough.
Yeah.
But I also don't know. Play Mandzukic.
I think Mandzukic plays because Leao's not been playing great up top. But he did score yesterday, so.
I think he's been decent. I mean, he hasn't had many minutes lately, to be honest. But
yeah, that's because he played four games in a row.
Comparing him to what we expect from Zlatan and what Zlatan brings to the team, Leao can't bring to the team, and that's what we've been basing him off, his performances up top. I think when he plays on the left wing, he's brilliant. So I just think, I reckon he'll play next week on the left wing and Rebic up top, and Mandzukic may get some minutes. I just don't think...
I would agree with that.
Mandzukic.
Yeah, I think Rebic will start up top.
I've seen some people calling for the false nine type thing that we did against Verona that did actually seem to work quite well, where we basically didn't actually play with the centre forward and the front four just moved about, and it seemed to cause them a lot of problems. So I wouldn't be dead against that, but I'd start Rebic up front over Leao just because he's at least got the physicality, and Genoa are a team that are going to come and defend deep. You know, there's no two ways about it. They're not going to take the game to us and try and beat us 3-2. They're going to try and nick a goal and win. So we're going to have to be on our A game when it comes to creativity. These are the games, we don't have Ibra, these are the games where Hakan needs to step up as a goal threat, you know. And these are the games where the wingers come into play, and it will help having Salamakers out wide, definitely. But you think about then if we were to play either Rebic or Leao up front, would there be space for Hauge? Because he's a goal threat. He's won us a lot of points this season with his clutch goals. So it'd be interesting to see what he does with selection. I think,
has he won us any points?
The one last week, and that's
it. He scored the third goal. Snap.
Well, in the Europa League, he scored
the winner.
He scored the 3-1 goal against Napoli, which obviously don't count as winning us any points. But it's
didn't he score the 3-1 against Celtic and all?
He scored the third goal a couple times. I don't think he scored any winners or anything, but maybe he has.
He scored the winner away at Sparta Prague.
That's one spot.
Yeah, there, and he scored the winner at home against Celtic, so he made it 3-2. And he scored the 3-1 goal away at Celtic. That wasn't the winner, obviously, but he was our top scorer in the Europa League. But, yeah, I'm interested to see what he does with the selection. And it just feels weird that we've got Mandzukic, who's now back from injury, and we brought him in for this very purpose, yet the thing that none of us are talking about is the idea of Mandzukic starting up front. You know, he's given us absolutely nothing, so...
He's been injured since he got here, and to start next week in a game that we have to get 3 points from when we don't know his actual fitness levels. Like, obviously, he might start because Pioli knows more about his fitness levels than we do, but just based off the fact that he hasn't had match minutes since Red Star, it just should be starting when we need 3 points. If we've been having minutes, or if he even got minutes at the weekend, I'd say starting. But I personally don't know his fitness level, so I just don't see why it'd be worth a risk.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think we'll probably win this game regardless. I think we have to. We don't have a choice. We got to get it done. So we're going to make it happen. That's the worst fucking preview I've ever given in my life, by the way. But it's all I got for you. It's
Genoa. We are going to win because we have to.
Yeah, we get the job. Thank you for turning your light on, by the way. It was driving me
nuts.
I just think it'll be a straightforward win. I think it'll be points turned around from the draw earlier on in the season. And I don't see a scenario really where we lose it. I just can't imagine it, to be fair. The one thing I do want though is I'm desperate for a clean sheet. So I'm sick, like I said, I'm sick of the good performances.
Yeah. Genoa was a team we could keep a clean sheet against as well.
But we probably I think we can make that. It's a general kickoff, so
it's because our goalkeeper's only making 7 mil. Once he's making 12, he'll be able to keep that clean sheet.
Should be able to.
Genoa have scored in each of the last four games. But apart from that, they don't score loads. They've scored 32 goals in 30 games all season, but they've only let in 44, which for a team that's been battling relegation for a bit of the season isn't terrible. So basically, there's not a lot of interesting games involving Genoa.
Have we let in like 38 or is it 36?
Don't know. Let me have a look.
No, it's something similar like that. I just think, like,
if we've let in, so that's not too bad.
How many?
35. Yeah, we let in 35. Inter and Juve have both let in 27, which is mental. But apart from that, Atalanta are winning 1-0. So yeah,
Atalanta's winning 1-0. Like, so then the ticker is now outdated as of right now.
Yeah, that's okay.
Where does that they jump Napoli, so they go fourth, right?
Yeah. Do you know what? I'll be negative. I'll predict a draw. I don't know. I just bad feeling, superstition about these lunchtime kickoffs. We never play well, and we never seem to play well against Genoa, no matter what. So 1-1 draw.
I'm gonna go 2-0 win. I'm gonna go call for a clean sheet, even though I just said we weren't gonna get one. And we'll have we won't have to get out of first gear.
Yeah.
Who do Juve and Atalanta play next week?
Juve and Atalanta play each other, and then Napoli play Inter next week.
Oh, baby, we have to win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, we do have to win.
I'll go 3-0. 3-0 to us. Routine.
That's actually pretty good. If we get a dub, that almost secures top four for us. If Inter beat Napoli,
it doesn't.
If Inter beat Napoli, because we're 4 points clear of Napoli. No, I know, but I mean, it gives us enough of a cushion.
Yeah, we still have to play Juve and Atalanta, so Atalanta is almost guaranteed going to be a loss.
Dropping points, though. One of them's about to drop points. That's what I'm saying. If we win, then we got that nice cushion on one of them.
When we come to play Juve, I think we're gonna slap them just because I didn't think we played when we lost 3-1 and we had seven players missing. Watching them recently, I don't think they're that good of a side. I'm literally not worried. I think we'll still finish second.
I really hope you're right. I just see Juve and they've turned into what they have been. They're flat track bullies again. They're sort of, you know, they just keep on. We got four
points.
It's
really just Ronaldo.
Huh?
It's really just Ronaldo. The rest of the team's not doing much. Like, what's Ronaldo's goal tally now? Isn't he on like 25?
No, Chiesa's been doing really well. Chiesa's been the main threat recently. He's been really good. Kulusevski scored today. Morata scored today, but he's been a bit hot and cold recently.
Yeah, well, he was out injured. He started really hot when he came back.
But thankfully, we don't have to worry about that game for a while. So, what did you say? 2-0, 3-0?
I'll go 2-0
and 1-1 for me. So let's hope I'm wrong, shall we? Right, questions. This one comes from Stefano. If you haven't seen some of Stefano's stuff on our YouTube channel, go and have a look. I'm doing a weekly upload of his, just looking in depth at various topics to do with the club. The latest one was on Gazidis and the stuff that the commercial department have been doing off field with sponsorships. Obviously, we signed that BMW one recently, so been a lot of attention on the marketing department. So go and give that video a watch. The next one, I believe, is going to be on Kessier, so that should be interesting. Anyway, he asks, who's the best pure passer at the club? Looking mainly at long balls / through balls. And he says, Hakan, Benacer, Salamakers, Kier, Tonali, just a list of names, basically. Who is the best passer?
Hakan for me. What he's doing,
when he's on, when he's very hot and cold.
Yeah, but that's the point. Like, who's the best passer? Like, on his day, Hakan is by far the best. Like, the best passer of the ball is Hakan.
I'd say Benacer.
I was going to go Benacer as well. I think Benacer is the most consistent, that helps him be the best.
I think he's good at picking passes out in like tight areas. He can make the short pass through multiple defenders. He can make the long ball over the top. I think he's the most well-rounded. passer we have.
I think Bennett's inconsistent.
Yeah.
Well, I think Bennett's like, he struggles. Like, when Bennett's having a bad game, he gives the ball away cheaply quite a lot. He did that against Sampdoria. You know, I know it was his first start back after a lengthy injury absence, but he struggled in that game. We couldn't hold on to the ball with him. So I don't know about Bennett being the most consistent. I think he's the best mover of the ball because he can midfield messy. He can dribble past players and he can also pass through the third quite well. That's one thing I will say about him. Hakan is probably the answer to this question, I think. Like, on his day, he's good. He's good at switching play. He's good with through balls. His passing artillery is the best. But statistically, the answer is Matteo Gabbia. So I'm going to go with that. He's got the highest pass percentage.
Back to, like,
they all count.
Room with five times in a row. No, of course you do, but no, range passes, Hakan, I think.
Yeah, my serious answer is Hakan. Yeah.
Also, I think
Kessié has got a lot better with it. I think he's got better. It was starting at a very low level. Like, he used to be awful on the ball. He used to be off, but he has got better at passing forwards. You know, he has improved a little bit in progressing play. He still tries to offload it to Bennett to do that for him. But there has been times when he's had to carry the midfield on his own, and you don't just carry the midfield with sideways passes. He's been doing everything.
I agree with Sally, though. I think he's
good shout.
It's so underrated, his passing, that no one wants to really admit it, because, well, I don't know why people don't appreciate him more, because his passes are joy, his touches are joy. His skill, I think me and Andy were talking about, all three of us actually, we were saying that his skill needs work on, but then he turned two players inside out in 90 seconds and got them both.
Yeah, he did.
So,
yeah, that's the first half, I think.
His passing's quite good. The way that he can split defenders and stuff like that, it's decent.
I think I was like one of the only people who said that when we did have a fit number 10 and we ended up playing Leal there, I was like, why not give Salamakers a game there? Because he doesn't look terrible in tight spaces. You know, he can turn very well. And also, his through ball's pretty good. You know, he's not bad there, but we ended up playing Leal there and the rest is history. Anyway, Max asks, who's your first signing if we qualify for the Champions League? Let's go realistic, obviously, not Neymar.
I'm going to sign Neymar regardless.
You're wrong.
Tomori for me.
Who?
Tomori.
He's at Tomori.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think we're going to sign him regardless of Champions League.
I do too.
Yeah, but
yeah, I think Pioli has essentially confirmed him.
The first signing for when we get Champions League for me is Tomori. Yeah. Like, that's the first one I want to see happen.
All right, let's say
first one that's not alone.
Yeah, someone that's a new name, because obviously Tonali would probably be the answer because we trigger that option to buy. And
Belotti then.
Same.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with one that hasn't been discussed once on here yet. Hakim Ziyech from Chelsea.
Oh, yeah, that's a great
shout. He's on his way out, and I think we could bundle him with Tomori. 55 mil. Boom. Right there. Done deal.
Or send the Romagnoli over there.
That too. I think we can make that happen. I really do. I think we have a good enough relationship with him. I think that's exactly what we need on the right wing. And I hear he's on the way out, so why wouldn't we?
He's
got Champions League experience.
I'm slightly against involving Romagnoli in a swap deal just because we've paid off his fee, which means that anything we sell Romagnoli for now is capital gain, and we could really do with that money. So if we're going to sell him, I would sell him for cash.
What do you mean we paid off his fee? We still have a future sale percentage we owe to Roma, don't we?
Well, yeah, we owe that to Roma, but it's above 25 million. I don't think we get that with a year left on his contract. And also, obviously, we bought him from Roma for 25 million.
So you're saying sell him for less than 25 to avoid that fee and then just use that as capital gain?
Well, it's 30% I know what you mean amount. About,
right. Amount above
30% on the amount above 25 million. Mm-hmm. So if it was,
yeah, so we sell him for 30, it's 30% of the 5 million after, right?
Yeah, so it is what it is in that sense. You know, the more we get, the better it is for us. But I'd rather just take the capital gains, to be honest. And then we've got that money that we can invest on someone again where the fee spread over multiple years. If Romagnoli leaves, it sounds like we're after the centre-back to replace him. And apparently, Jacobone said, and he's been pretty on the money recently, he said it might be Milenkovic because he's got a year left on his deal and might be able to. And I would welcome that with open arms.
Yeah, that's who I wanted in the January window before the Tomori link. So I'm happy.
And then if you think we'd have Kier Tomori, Milenkovic, Gabia, Kalulu, we'd be looking pretty good for next season. You know, I think Milenkovic is seen as the long term heir to Simon Kier because they're very similar in terms of their playing style. Interesting to see if that one develops. I'm torn between a right winger and a striker for this question because I think we really, really need a new striker. But I think based on the fact that our first signing should be our first major investment, it has to be a right winger. And of the names that we've been linked with, I still think that Iacona is the one that I like the most because he gives us something completely different to what we have. So I'll say him, again, being realistic. But if you haven't looked already in the features section, I wrote a thing, 7 right-wingers that we could target. And there's some really interesting names in there. One of them, an English lad, funnily enough, at PSV, who I can't remember. I can't pronounce the surname. But, yeah, he's looking good. So there are targets out there for the right wing. But yeah.
Wait, he's English and you can't say his last name? It's not like Smith or something?
It's Smith.
Smith's Welsh.
John Smith.
John Smith Stadium. His name is Chukwunoso Noni Tristan Madueke. So there you go. That's why I can't pronounce it. I've probably butchered that. But yeah, he's good. Look him up if you haven't. Anyway, Gigi, how confident are you that Milan finishing the top four considering the team's weak mentality and form? He's right.
John, you want to have a go at that?
Just because we've beaten Parma doesn't mean we're in good form.
Yeah, we're in bad form, but I don't think our mentality is bad. I think our mentality is fine.
To say our mentality is weak when we've come back from the games that we've come back like in and stuff like that, yeah, I think we're hitting a bit of poor form, but you've got to look at it from the aspect of how many injuries we've had. We've kind of got our full-strength side showed against Parma yesterday. So I wouldn't say, our form is a bit poor, but I still think top four is a given. And to say our mentality is weak, I think it's just a bit ridiculous. Sorry.
I see it both ways. It's like
there's 5 points between us and 5th place. And to say that top 4 is given, it's not given at all.
I think it is when we've
2 losses, we can be out of top 4.
Yeah, but we haven't dropped out of the top 2 all season, even though everyone's been saying, oh, we're having a disaster, this, that, the other. I just don't see it happening. I think it is a given. When you look at the schedule that's coming up, then
we have Torino, Sassuolo, Atalanta and Juve, teams that we've struggled against the past like 3 years.
I think there's 2 easy games in that and 2 hard games. And, you know, the hard ones are obvious. Juve and Atalanta, they beat us in the reverse.
The hard ones,
they're obviously competition, but I don't know. I wouldn't say it's a given, but I definitely don't think it's something we should write off. You know, I don't even know if I'd say it's 50-50. I'm still leaning towards we get Champions League. But I do think it's going to come down to the wire. Like, I don't think we're going to wipe the floor with everyone. But
I love Gian's confidence, but I think that I do as well think that we're going to get it. I don't think it's given. But I think that we're going to finish in 4th by, like, 1 point.
As much
we're
as
just going to barely get it.
We haven't got out of the top 2, like I said, all season, despite having this horrendous form. Like, we've shown that we can win games even when we're up against it or get draws when we're up against it. The fact that everyone else in the league is so inconsistent. You look at Juventus, Atalanta, Napoli, they've all been inconsistent. They're all playing each other in the next couple of weeks, so someone's going to drop points. As long as we do our job, I just genuinely don't see us dropping out of this offer. I don't even see...
Well, obviously,
I get that. I understand your reasoning, but I also think, like, there was a point where we had, like, a 12-point lead at the top of the table, and now Inter have a 12-point lead of us. Like,
yeah, but again,
we've had
it. Was 8. It was 8 points.
I thought we were
the
well, regardless, they now have
20 points that we've dropped.
Yeah, but if you look at the points that we've dropped in games, like, I keep banging on about injuries, but that has been our biggest downfall this season. You take away the injuries and we're still first place. It just shows how good the mentality of the squad is just to keep fighting in the top. If someone had said to you at the start of the season, do you see Milan in the top 2 with 50 plus injuries after 30 games, 31 games, whatever? we'd have all said no. We'd have all said we'd be lucky to be even in the top four.
So no, I agree with that. I think how good we are. Slating our mentality is wrong. I think we have a great mentality. I'm just saying I don't think top four is a given.
I think the argument of, well, we've been in the top two for all the season is correct, but we've been top of the league for 20 rounds and then we weren't. So we've been in the top two for however many rounds, and then we might not be anymore, and then we might not even be in the top. Like, we can't be complacent, but as you say, as long as we take care of our business, then let the other results take care of themselves, then that's fine. Like, we had this thing where, for the first half of the season, all Pioli ever said was game by game. We take it game by game. And then all of a sudden, when we were top, started being talk of the Scudetto. Like, he was constantly asked about it, and you know, he responded to it in different ways. Ibra came out and said, yeah, we're going for the Scudetto, blah, blah, blah. And that's when you start to think, all of a sudden, the narrative's changed from it being game by game. We just focus on the next game. And that was doing us so well to, oh, all of a sudden, they're starting to believe in the bigger picture. And to be fair, you know, Inter are on an 11-game winning run. I hate to say it, but fair play to them. You know, there's not many teams in Europe that would hold up with a team breathing down their neck like that. All right, and we are where we are. We found ourselves, whatever it is now, 12 points behind.
Where did he just go?
He went into a box, it looked like. What was that?
He's getting out.
I don't know. Something to prove us wrong.
We can't be complacent. That's the bottom line. And I don't think top four is a given at all. Not when the gap is this small, and not when there is still so much to play for. But the next few results will absolutely be key. If we can, for example, keep a four-point advantage with four games to go, we're looking pretty good because we should win, you know, a couple of
them. I mean, we talked about Juve and Atalanta are playing each other next week. Like, that's someone dropping points, potentially both of them. That gives us that extra cushion if we beat Genoa. So, I mean, at that point, yeah, then we can start saying it's a bit more. But there's work to be done until then. I don't think in this exact moment it is. But I think as the week progresses, then we could start kind of leaning into that, but game by game.
What are we rooting for in that? Are we aiming for a draw in Juve Atalanta?
I would suppose so.
I think that are the best one. And same with Napoli Inter. No, we probably want Inter to win. I mean, they've already won the Scudetto, so.
Yeah. Well, that's rough.
So
it's not a given.
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
That is a bite, to be fair. Next question, Rocky Ward, who out of our under 21 players do you, I mean, some of these are 22, but anyway, who out of our under 21s do you expect to explode the most with Milan? And he lists six players: Liao, Hauge, Tonali, Salamakers, Kalulu, or Gabia. Who out of those things will end up making the biggest impact?
Tonali.
He already has, and I just think if everyone continues growing at the same rate, like, he's already above the rest of them by a good amount. Although Gabi is a good shout as well.
Liao has a lot on tap potential. Obviously, we saw it in the first half of the season when everything was going really well, that he's a real goal scoring threat, and he's had two good half seasons so far. The problem is that they haven't combined to a good season. He's had two really bad half seasons as well, let's be honest. His goal yesterday, for example, was his first since January the 4th. And that's quite a long time to go. And, you know, we're relying on him for end product. But there's definitely potential in him. I'm not ashamed to say, and this might get hate, I'm not ashamed to say that I would sell him if a good offer came in. Calcio Mercato did something earlier saying that we'd sell if an offer of around 50 million came in. I don't think we're getting that. I think you come to the negotiating table for around about 35, 40, though, definitely. But I understand those people who don't want to sell him because it's like the argument with so many players that we've seen leave, like Andre Silva, for example. And
I don't think there's any argument about him leaving him. I don't think there's any argument about Andre Silva leaving, though, only from Asia.
Should have stayed.
But then you see, for example, now he's probably a 50 million plus striker, and we've missed out on that because he's gone somewhere and done really well. Paqueta is doing very well at Lyon, albeit I don't think anybody would have argued with his sale either. You know, that's just the way it goes. But then that's the risk that you run if you sell someone like Liao and they go elsewhere and explode.
I think that Salamaki is going to explode next year. I think just on the rate that when he joined us and the rate that he's carried on, like, progressing and how important he is to our team and our system, and the fact that he's still only 21, maybe 22 now, I just think we're going to see a different character next year, and his all-round game's going to improve. And that's where I think that I don't think we're actually that desperate for a right winger. Yes, the alternative for Sally when he's not playing, so an upgrade on Casty, but in terms of like an out-and-out starter for the right wing, I think we've got one already that's going to be very good in the next couple of years.
I would like to see Salamakers do, because he's a really, really likable player, isn't he? You know, I think he just loves being here. He loves being at the club. We are going to sign a new right winger this summer. That's one thing we know. Now, whether that's a right winger who comes in and instantly, like, you know, they're starting 100%, or whether it's someone who comes and rotates for a bit. Right, here's an interesting one that's come up in the last couple of days. And at first, people laughed off, but now Sky is saying that it seems to be something a bit serious. Greg asks, do you buy the Insigne Milan rumours? If so, who would you rather sell, Rebic or Leao, to make room for him?
So, I think Insigne's agent is using us to get a better contract. It's happened plenty of times in the past.
Yeah, I can't say any different than that.
In an ideal, like, if he does end up signing, I'd sell Rebic, personally.
Same.
I just think Leao's got a lot of untapped potential. The Rebic, I don't really think he's a Champions League quality player, and I hope I'm wrong next season, but I just think you get a solid 25 million from Rebic from, say, a mid-table Premier League club or something like that, and would be worth reinvesting elsewhere.
I think Rebic's move, I reckon, will be back to Germany. If he does leave us, that is. Also, you got to consider that because of the crafty way we did that deal, basically Rebic is down as like 2.5 million purchase. So we're likely to make a big profit if we do sell him on. And that might be something that we consider because we paid 28 mil for Leao. So it's hard to make a big, big profit on that. I wouldn't sell either. And I'd play Insigne as an attacking midfielder because he has done that. If he is to arrive, he's played as a 10 before, I'd play him there. I think he's the kind of... Go on.
He's arguably one of the best left wingers in the league. So I don't like playing that position, personally.
Like, isn't he Napoli's highest? Isn't he Napoli's top scorer?
Is Mertens just got to the 100 recently?
I think he's got 15. Mertens has been injured, hasn't he? And obviously, Osimhen's played a bit. Let me have a look.
Oh, sorry, for all time, not just this season. Sorry.
I mean, all time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's Insigne. I'm fairly sure it's Insigne.
I just don't
see it's
like bringing a top striker and playing him in a position that he's played in before, but he's not going to be as effective in. Like, Insigne's a left winger, he's one of the best left wingers in the league. So if you bring him in, you play him at left wing, you don't mess with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you don't send Zlatan to play him on the wing, you know? He's a striker. So.
Probably for the investment that it would take to sign him from a rival, and again, I don't think this is happening in a million years, but the money that it would take, even if he's got 1 year left on his deal, to sign Insigne from a rival, that's the kind of investment where it really has to work out, you know? And that's why...
Immediately has to work out.
Yeah, and that's when... Do you know what? Maybe you change formation if you sign someone like Insigne, and you play with two up front, and then you have Leao playing alongside Ibra, and you have Insigne as a left winger. So you play like a whatever that would be, 4-4-2 or something. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. If I have to sell one, then probably Leao.
I don't think 4-4-2 is a terrible option for us. I mean, I don't see a need to make the switch, but hypothetically, I mean, we already kind of have a double pivot, so we could have the same midfield duo, and then, you know, our wingers still. You'd have to bin Hakan at that point, and have a double striker. I don't know. I don't think there's a necessity for that. I don't think we would make the switch if we signed someone like Insigne, but
I understand why people are saying you've got to go and get Insigne if you can get him. I totally understand that because he's one of the best wingers in the league and has been for years now. It's a signing that instantly takes your team to the next level, and he's got Champions League experience. You know, he's been an Italy international for the best part of a decade now, and it's like, it is what it is. It would be a fantastic signing. But I just think you maybe have to move too much around to make it work.
I think the reason why I'd get rid of Rebic is because if you bring in someone of Insigne's age, you don't want two old left, not old, but you know what I mean, like two aging left wingers when you've got two left wingers in Haug and Leao. So Rebic, it's kind of like a light swap. in my eyes. Mm. Like, you won't be enough youngster for an old person. Especially
How old is Rebic?
26, 27. He's not 28. He's not old, but you know what? He doesn't do a lot in my eyes.
Rebic is 27, yeah. Still, his contract as well. You think that by the time he gets towards the end of his contract, you really are thinking, oh, do we give a 30-year-old another deal? You know, it's tough. I think Insigne also, though, like, he's 29 now, and he, maybe 30. He relies a lot on pace. You think in 2 or 3 years, his legs might finally go, and he might succumb to more injury problems.
I think we're going a bit backwards in our project. Like, we've built up this massive new project, and that's the way forward. And Ibrahim Kier was needed, don't get me wrong, but then to be linked with Insigne, Ilicic, it's just going, it feels like we're going a bit backwards, like buying Serie A players that were good at the time, but they're just about to and it doesn't seem worth it.
I think it's showing where we need experience and where we're willing to bend. Because, you know, at some point you need experienced players on the team. You can't just... I mean, some teams do it, but we're not all, you know, we're not.
The I agree with both of you.
Oh, no, I'm not saying we don't need experience. I just think to say, for example, we got Ilicic and Insigne and we'll take Uber up top. To have three players over the age of 30 and an attacking four, it just seems silly when we're on a youth budget. I think the experience needs to be in certain positions like care made sense because you need experience at the back. Uber up top's experience as a leader up front. So I just think if we're going for a certain project, you have to stick with that and then not just try and get the players that are about to finish the prime years.
I agree with that, but I also think this is the right move to be going for these type of players. I just don't think youth projects are worth it, to be honest. I think in the long run, you're gonna lose more than you're gonna win. I would rather get the games.
I'm just saying, if that's what we want to go in forward,
right? No, and I agree with that. Yeah. If we want a youth project, then this isn't the way to go. But if we want to win, then I think we need to just bin the youth project and get winners.
It's interesting because we all laughed at Inter for their choice of signings last summer. Because, for example, we won the race for Tonali and they got Vidal, and, you know, they ended up signing Alexis Sanchez on a permanent deal. Kolarov arrived, Ashley Young. I mean, we were all laughing saying that's a crap market. But they've signed aging players who probably are going to be more detrimental to the cause than anything. But they're in win-now mode. Why? Because they bought experienced players, winners. You know. And now we're at that point as well, where if we want to take that next step, do we think that three players under the age 23 is going to be the right thing to take us to the Scudetto? Maybe we are now in Inter's position where we need those signings to take us mentality-wise to the next level. Because I still think we are quite fragile at times mentally. If we go behind in a game, we don't win. It's as simple as that. You know. And at home, we've been pretty dreadful this season compared to how good we've been away from home. We'll see how the team reacts as well when crowds come back in. And I hate using that argument, but...
I honestly don't think that this year, I don't think it matters if you played home or away, apart from the travel times. I don't think the stadium
apart from for us.
Yeah, but like we could have had a home form and then be losing away, and then we'd still be complaining that we haven't got a good away form. As long as the points on the board, personally, I'm not right bothered. We've got enough points at the minute. We're sat in second. Obviously, the home form could have been better and we could have more. But this year, I don't think it's made a difference playing home or away because it's all empty stadiums. Everyone's in the same bracket.
I agree with that.
No, I agree. Yeah, I don't know what it is with our home form. I know we've talked about it at length before, but I just don't understand why we seem to be worse when we've got the comfort of knowing our own environment and everything that comes with playing at home. That confuses me. I think it's 16 points better off away from home this season compared to at home. That is mental, really. That's the biggest points differential of any team in Europe's top five leagues. So that is a bit bad. But it encourages me because if we can keep the away form where it is, our form can only get better, surely. You know, and that's a big step. If you add, say, 10 points onto our home form, we are right back in this title challenge. So it is what it is. But yeah, that's it. I'll wrap it up because I am, quote unquote, conscious of time. but yeah, thanks very much for joining, everyone. If you've made it this far, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Joined by Anthony Torgrude.
Yep, a lot of fun.
Barry?
Yeah, another good week. I like this new program. It sounds like you guys like it as well. If there's anything that you guys want us to add on the ticker or anything, just shout out and we will give AJ more work to do.
And we'll see if I'll listen.
Yeah, see you next week after a win.
Yeah, fingers crossed you're right. Catch you next week. And yeah, thank you very much for watching.
Andrea Conti, bella palla per Rebic. Rebic Ibra. Rebic. 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 Il tiro. Goal!